from Hackensack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning. Welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team. And next to me on my left is Becky Ivins, broker owner of Movers Real Estate. And with us today is Ron Shalott, our attorney at law that helps us in so many ways, Ron. And it's great to have you here. Becky, good morning.
Good morning. And it is likely that I could describe Ron Shalott as my advisor, my counsel, as opposed in before something happens rather than after someone's complaining, right? Because most my CPA is kind of that way too. He's not just a tax filer. I call him. I bet I contact my CPA twice a month.
I think that's something with you, Becky, that it really, I'm sure our listeners get the idea of. You are very proactive when it comes to money and law things, because it's so much better to be prepared and know kind of ahead of the game what you're dealing with, so you're not reactive to it.
I'm usually.
Which is what Ron is, yeah.
I'm usually intentional. I would say that for sure, which is so weird because when it comes to social life, I am not as intentional as I am very spur of the moment.
Like just going, like getting together with friends, that just socializing.
Last year I talked to someone of a late afternoon and I said, I'm going to come have lunch with you tomorrow. And Jim and I hopped on a plane, went to Chicago, had lunch with her.
Oh, had lunch in Chicago?
Yes. And then headed back home, and we were home by the evening. So I'm pretty much spur of the moment when it comes socially.
Yeah.
But when it comes to business, yeah, I do put my business hat on. And Ron's glad of that, I think, because otherwise I would be calling him for defense all the time instead of just for advice on how to handle things. So, Ron, do you have a special topic you want to talk about, or would you like me to talk about power of attorney and durable power of attorney and the different types, because that comes up in my business a lot?
Well, I like to talk about whatever you talk about. I will say, well, good morning, first of all, to both of you. It's a crisp day out there in the fall. We finally have fall weather here in Oklahoma City. But I was noticing the last couple of weeks, I got a couple of things in the mail. I've got a card from a realtor, not Becky Ivins, by the way, but some other realtor, asking me to explore my options about selling my house. And then I got another card in the mail from another company who says he would like to buy my house. I have no intention of moving or selling my house. I can't afford to pack up all my stuff to get it out of my house, and we are very happy where we are. Enjoy our neighbors. They're great neighbors. And it's something that I'm just surprised about, that we are getting solicited to sell our house. But that brings up the questions that you have, which is, all right, you want to sell your house, but there's an issue with potentially incapacity, or if there's a situation that you're buying a house, how would you take the house? How would you take title to the house? Should you run it into a trust? That's a question that I get a lot in my practice. In my practice, when people come in to talk with me about estate planning matters, they want a will or want to talk about trusts because they don't understand them. The first thing I talk to them about is durable powers of attorney. Whether they came in to talk about that or not, they're going to get that speech at the beginning, because when you're looking at life, you're looking at, first off, the phase where perhaps you're not capable of handling your financial affairs or healthcare affairs. And then secondly, the death, the passing away of either yourself or your spouse. Consequently, you get then into the planning, the estate asset transfer planning, if taxes need to be talked about. So We have a lot of things we can talk about.
Well, let me talk to you about something that I'm dealing with right now. And that is, when I list a house, the first thing I always do is look at who's the owner of that property, of the owner of public record.
And that's the most important thing. As a realtor, and Mark hit on this, as a realtor, you've got two aspects. You have the law aspect and the financial aspect. And a realtor, whether they know it or not, they deal with both of those a lot. Many of them, I think, go into real estate not thinking about that. There's a lot of law aspect to it and a lot of financial aspect. And the number one question, and you and I have talked about this for now a dozen years that we've been on this program together, the first thing you look at is, as a realtor, is who actually owns the property? Because the person that comes in that says, I want to sell my house or this house, may not actually be the owner.
Well, two properties this week that I listed were not owned by the people. Well, they are owned by the public record statement, except that the people that called me were not the people in title. So one of them was in title as a trust. I get this a lot. And it says the... I don't know. We'll make up a name because I don't want to use real names. Okay. So the Jane Doe Trust. And it names who the trustee is. But I think it said so-and-so co-trustee. Well, the co-trustee is deceased. So I need a memorandum of trust that shows who has the right to actually sign my listing agreement to start with. And to the right to sign the deed. So could you explain to us what a memorandum of trust is? Because a trust is a private document. That's many times the only reason to have a trust is because it's private.
It is private, and the trust is created by what's called a trust agreement. Basically kind of a contract with the trustee, which many times can be yourself. Which is why we have the person that makes the trust and the trustee being one and the same person many times on these revocable trusts. So we have a trust agreement that actually sets out the terms of the trust, goes into the specifics, usually a longer document, you know, anywhere from 6 to 60 pages sometimes. However, you do not file that of record anywhere. It's kept private. What you have a situation where... it is in the name of, let's say, the Jane Doe Living Trust is the name of the trust. All right. Who is the person that's capable of signing or making decisions for the Jane Doe Living Trust? The trust agreement will say, however, you don't want to file or don't file the trust agreement of record in the property. Instead, you file a short document called a memorandum of trust or sometimes called an affidavit of trust.
Or certificate of trust.
Certificate of trust. I mean, different states call it different things. Oklahoma, we actually call it memorandum of trust. But I see a lot of these forms that lawyers or people get off the internet that use different phraseologies and different titles for it. It's one page, sometimes two. Every now and then I'll see one that's five pages. And it just sets out the bare bones of the trust as to the name of the trust, who is the trustee, and if that trustee is deceased or incapacitated, who's the next person in line?
I saw one this week that was, I think it was 6 or 8 pages for the memorandum of trust. I did not read the whole thing. I thought, sending this to the title company, let the lawyer read it.
Well, the memorandum of trust then is filed of record on the county where the real property is owned. And the reason for that is you have the title and name of the Jane Doe Trust, but who do you go to talk to? And the memorandum of trust will give you who do you go talk to, who has the authority to act on behalf of the trust. Since, unlike business entities, there's no real public filing record as to who the person would be responsible for signing it. So you look at that document, and it'll say who is the trustee, who is the person that's authorized. Now, if it says co-trustees, it depends upon if it's two or multiple co-trustees, then you have to look at a situation where can one trustee sign without the others?
And that's all in the document. We're going to continue to talk about that.
Right after this break on News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with Ron Shalott, our advisor, our attorney, and our friend. And he's talking today about durable power of attorney and memoranda of trust, which one of the questions I have, Becky, and I'm sure you have faced this, is what happens when it's in a trust and you can't find a memorandum of trust?
Well, that
and
happened.
You're dealing with a thing where you have someone where the memorandum says this person has to sign and they're deceased. So what do you do when it goes wrong?
Well, this week I went out to a house, and I actually went out last week, and we were in the preparation stages and weren't quite ready to list the house. But in the meantime, I had to run kind of parallel lines of effort, get the house ready and figure out who can sign. Because this was scary when she told me that, well, I said, well, your home is owned by a trust, so I'm going to need to get a copy of a memorandum of trust. And I said, it was made, and I know the family for like 40 years, so I know that they're Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I said, well, so it's a document called a memorandum of trust, usually the last page in the trust. If you've got a binder, it's almost always the very last little tab in the trust. And she said, you need my trust? I said, no, I never ask for a trust. It is supposed to be private. I don't want your trust. All I need is a memorandum of trust. And she said, well, I dissolved my trust. I said, oh, you did? And I said, did you legally dissolve your trust? And she said, well, I'm not sure about that. My will dissolves my trust. I said, so does your will, once you die, your trust is dissolved? She said, I'm not real sure. I said, well, I do have to have a copy of it because, and she says, I don't even know if I have the papers anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, luckily, the attorney she used filed them a public record. And it was like 6 or 8 pages long, the memorandum was. And so now we know who has the authority to sign, and it was either of the trustees, the co-trustees, which was handy because one is deceased. So I ran it past the title attorney at Chicago Title, and Cheryl Saxon says, yes, she can sign on her own, no problem.
Wow.
And I said, awesome. So that's great because that's filed a public record. And so now we're dealing with a lot.
Are there times that you can find the memorandum of trust, but you can't locate the trust itself? And Ron, what happens?
That can happen quite easily because oftentimes the memorandum is filed of record. It's always supposed to be filed of record if there's real property, but sometimes people don't get that done. Let's be honest about that. So there should be the memorandum of trust on file, which will give you the specifics. Just the bare bones specifics of trustee, name of the trust, things of that nature. It doesn't necessarily deal with distributions of powers of trustee, except in a summary fashion. I have had situations where people cannot find the trust. They've lost the trust. They've had it for so long. But we do find the memorandum, and then we look at the memorandum to see what it says. And if it's a revocable trust, a revocable trust can be amended at any time, so we simply amend the trust, not create a new one, which we could do as well, but we just do an amendment of the trust and create that. So we do have then a live trust that has perimeters to it, and it can be done that way. If, however, you cannot find the trust or the memorandum of the trust, but there is a name of a trust on the property record, it becomes a bit more difficult as to how you handle that and what a title company would accept in terms of that. However, that's less likely to happen we do have situations, I've seen them, where people don't have the memorandum for some reason, or maybe it was never done the way that they did it. They didn't use an attorney who was an estate planning attorney, or perhaps they just did it themselves. I represented a lady one time who hired me to help her out in her estate matter, and she said, "Well, I've got a trust." I said, "Oh, really? Yeah, let me look at it." Well, it's like a five-page fill-in-the-blank trust. I said, "Well, where'd you get this at?" She said, "I bought it for a dollar at a garage sale." And that was her trust. That's very dangerous. So we got rid of that and changed that. But it's very important. That's why you use an attorney who handles estate matters that can guide you through it, because it's more than just, oh, let's make a trust. And I've seen lawyers who get out in public and say, everybody needs a trust. Not true. That is absolutely bad legal advice to say everybody needs a trust. It's not always a situation. Not everybody needs one. It may be helpful for many people, but not for everybody.
Well, I'm sure somebody's listening going, well, I'm not sure about my trust, or I'm not sure if I need a trust. And if you want to get a hold of Ron Shalhoub, you can go to BeckyIvins.com, click on favorites, and right there it has Ron's number, and have a conversation. And because this is something that if you don't take care of it ahead of time, boy, it can cause a mess. Can't it, Becky? I mean, you've seen it over and over again.
I see it pretty much weekly when I go out and try to sell people's homes and we don't know who can sign.
And then Becky will come to me and say, all right, we got this problem.
Yeah.
What do we do about it? If it's very serious, and many times you can go to Chicago Title and they'll help you out as well.
Well, and I went to Chicago Title both times on this, and the you know, I got a clearance on one and the other one not yet. The documents are okay, but there's issues surrounding capacity. So it's just really hard when you have an owner of a property that might or might not. I want to know what the disclosure, by the way. On our disclosure, you have to fill out the disclosure. Well, if the wife takes care of everything in the house and she dies and the husband's sitting there and doesn't know anything about the house or can't remember half of it, can that person fill out a disclosure? Or does their power of attorney have the right to fill out a disclaimer? Mm. Are they exempt from a disclosure? You can be exempt if you are a fiduciary of settling an estate for a or someone where you're the trustee, the conservatorship, or guardianship. But there's nothing about being a POA on that form. Now, I did send that over to our Forms and Contract Committee at the Real Estate Commission this week, and I said, hey, what about when you have a POA?
Yeah.
So we need to get to all of that. If you have a question, give us a call. 840-1000. We'll try to answer your call.
We will be right back with more with Ron Shalhoub on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening with Becky Ivins, broker owner of Movers Real Estate, and I'm Mark Carr. I'm a team member, and we are here with Ron Shalhoub, and we are going over things that really can cause so many issues if it is not taken care of. And so talking about memoranda of a trust and kind of getting deep into the weeds of dealing with it.
But first, it is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to make a small repair or do a complete overhaul, which they're doing on one of my properties right now. Turns out that my and most people's rental properties do not have the clause in it or the endorsement or whatever it is to pay for new code restrictions. Like when you have 1x8 or 1x6 decking and you replace, you tear it down and replace the roof, turns out you got to put new decking on there. So I had to depend on Robbins Roofing to give me a good price because
the insurance didn't cover the decking of it.
They didn't cover the decking, and it's an actual cash value policy because it's a rental property. They don't do total replacement on rental properties, the company that I'm with. And, well, not I don't know of any that do.
Yeah.
So I depended on Robbins Roofing. Larry Robbins called, well, Becky, do you want us to do this or do you want us to do this? I said, Larry, I want you to make those decisions. You are the professional. You know what needs to be done. I want it to be a good watertight roof. I'm going to sell the property. I do not want to spend any money. I don't have to, but I have to deliver a good product when I'm selling it. So Larry Robbins, he said, well, you know, you've got some fascia board that really needs to be replaced. I said, well, can you do that for me? And he said, yes, our guys can do that for you. So there's things that need to be done.
Yeah. And if you want to call Robbins Roofing, you can call them at 728-3700. That's 728-3700. Or you can go to BeckyIvins.com and click on favorites. When you hear any of the people you talk, or not any, but many of the people who talk on the show is one of your part of your favorites.
Yes.
And so our word of the day.
Well, actually, we're going to have a word of the day test.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
People who have been listening to us, Becky, for a dozen years on this program, we've done this word twice. So let's see a show of hands of all of your listeners who knows the definition of mortgage. Mortgage. I don't see any hands raised at all.
Dick has his hand raised.
All right. Well,
Dick and Lucy both listen faithfully.
That's good. Good. Good for them. They would then know the mortgage is actually a combination of two French words, mort and gage. And the mort, think of dead. That's what it means, dead. And the second part being pledge. A dead pledge. And so what does that mean? Well, it is an assignment of property to secure a loan. And when you take out a loan, you get a note. So you will have the note, which is the debt. But to secure that note, to make sure that the lender will get paid if in the event that you die, you pledge property, so you give them a mortgage, which then acts as a lien on the property.
Well, your promise to pay is the note.
Promise to pay is the note, but you're pledging the property in the event that you don't satisfy the note, you die without having paid the note off, that they can then collect on the note by foreclosing on that pledge of the property.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a bank that I took a loan out from many years ago who wanted me to sign two notes so they would have a duplicate to keep in a different safe. Well,
back in the old days.
Well, it's probably been about, it's only been about maybe 15 years ago.
Old days.
Oh, that's old days. Well, trust me, I knew better than to sign two notes because that is a promise to pay two different amounts. So what? And they just said, well, we can't do it if you don't do this. So right above my signature on the second one, I said, this is a duplicate note. I forgot exactly the words. But anyway, saying it was a duplicate because I didn't want to promise to pay twice.
Well, there'll be times that there'll be multiple signed copies of contracts. We used to do that back in the old days when we had carbon paper and you didn't have the photocopy machines or especially now the scanning electronics. Instead, we would sign multiple copies and they would say you could be signing counterparts. They would refer to a loan number at a date and an amount, and that would be just one loan, even though you have multiple copies that look like multiple originals. We used to do that even with wills. We used to sign more than one copy of a will back in the dark ages. Very bad idea, mainly because you didn't know which will was really the original one. They're both considered originals, yet if you went to change one and didn't get rid of the other one, you could cause some kind of confusion. As well as if you have a signed copy of a will, you're supposed to deposit that in a court within a statutory time period, within about a month, if you have a copy of it. So as a lawyer now, I don't keep a signed copy of a will. I used to. Don't do that anymore.
There is confusion in the court, confusion around wills and estates. I think we have a whole court system to take care of this. The probate court, right?
We do. It's actually fairly simplistic, but we tend to complicate it by thinking, overthinking things, and by trying to be too smart at times. You have a will. You have one signed will. That's your last will and testament. It's your will. You keep it. You keep it in a secure, safe spot. I always suggest get a nice heavy firebox. Put that in there along with some other important papers like your house deed, things of that nature. So you have it. And then let the person who is supposed to be the personal representative to operate the estate know where it's at so they can retrieve it upon death and file it with the court. But we do have situations where people will have a will and it'll be secured somewhere, but somebody gets the will and disposes of it. Some funny business goes on. It happens more than I would like to hear, but you should have it in a secure location. And there are times, I'll say, with a personal representative, if you trust that person enough, give them a copy of it. The copy is not necessarily usable as the will itself, but it'll at least give them some indication as to what's in it and that they are the person who is going to be responsible for operating the estate.
Tell me the difference between administrator, executor, executrix, personal representative, that sort of thing.
Okay. Some of these words come from Latin. The Latin has a male and female endings, if you've ever taken Latin. So when you're looking at administrator, that's somebody in an estate where there's no will, or a will has not been found yet, or not been approved, which was called probate, proven. So you would have an administrator. That's a male. Administratrix is a female, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. If it's a will, you have an executor or executrix, which is the female version of the male executor, but we tend to just use executor. Nowadays, we call them all personal representative, a very generic term that covers both and can cover male or female. So you even have that with signing the will. You have the testator or the testatrix, which is the female version of that. So it's really a Latin ending designation. But if you have an administrator, it's usually there's no will, or the person who's named in the will is disqualified, and so the court appoints somebody specially. That could be an administrator. The executor is the person who is nominated in the will that the court approves and appoints.
Okay, so there's a lot to this estate stuff, and we've got a little bit more to discuss on this, by the way. I want to direct you to BeckyIvins.com, where you can find Ron's information, any of my favorites. Ron, how much do you pay to be on my favorites page?
I pay?
Oh, you do not pay. That's correct. Nobody pays to be on.
You don't even have my credit card number.
That is true. That is true. I'm not much of a credit card person. My favorites are my favorites because I have worked with them for many years. They are great at what they do. I can trust them, and you can trust them too. just go to...
Go to BeckyIvins.com, and right across the top, you'll see Becky's Favorites. And here's what I encourage is that you've built relationships over several decades here in Oklahoma.
Today's my anniversary.
Is it really?
Today is my anniversary. I got my license 43 years ago today.
Oh, my goodness.
License to sell real estate.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 Thank you, Mike Gannon, for the applause. I mean, out of that, you've built some great relationships, and we get to take advantage of that, and that's a tremendous thing. And we will be right back with Ron Schlott on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. It's been a great program, I think, with Ron Schlott, and learning just so much every time he is with us.
And Ron, we rounded third base already. You got to bring us home.
Well, first of all, I need to mention that in the Oklahoma Bar Association, there are lawyers and committees and sections that work very hard to try to update the real property laws and the estate and the probate laws. The real property law section works very hard and brings out the title examination standards handbook every year, a new updated version. There's the estate planning, probate, and trust section. I'm a member of both of those sections. I'm not necessarily actively involved, but I monitor each of those sections. The lawyers in both of those sections do a great job of devoting their time for free to help with updating the laws so that, you know, realtors can be comfortable with regard to who owns the property, how to transfer the property, nuances that come up every now and then on titles and things of that nature. So I want to give a kudos to both of them. What you should be doing, though, in looking right now in the fall, if you have a trust, is to just to review it and to see and make sure it still is doing what you wish, depending upon differences that have happened in your life. And the same way with a durable power of attorney, because it's a holistic approach. And look at life insurance policies, the beneficiaries, things of that nature. That's what I talk to people about when they first come in, when they ask about a will or a trust, and we go into a lengthy discussion on it. And someone comes in and talks to me, it's a good hour, 2 hour long discussion that we have going over these, because I tailor them to their particular situation.
So, Ron Schlott, you can find him.
You can find him at BeckyIvins.com and click on Favorites, or you can call our office at 722-3232. That's 722-3232.
You know, we are a kind of a busy office, and I have people all the time saying, well, I know you're busy, but, well, I'm never too busy to do my business.
Right.
I mean, that is, I'm not busy for the sake of being busy. I monitor my time real carefully, but I'm happy to come out and meet with you and talk to you about selling your house. Now I'm at a real dilemma, because I love Eunice Corey, and her show's about to come on, and she always has something very valuable. But I am actually a guest on another radio show right after this. So record Eunice and turn your channel over to 1640 KZLS, the Eagle, for the OSJ Rise and Thrive Radio Hour. Tom Nix and I are the guests, and we're going to be talking about the old-fashioned hymn sing at Hope Retreat Ranch on October 24th, 5:30. It's just an outdoor event where everyone's going to gather and sing hymns. So 1640 is that place on your radio dial. And I still love you, Eunice, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll be back next week with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK.